Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Starmer.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net.
Well, this is the second part of a podcast on Jörg Meyer-Starmer. We like to speak today in this session about Jörg's move from academia to the field of consultancy and facilitation in development, and Jörg as an entrepreneur. What was the motivation to move from INF and Duisburg University to create a business consultancy firm and to be an entrepreneur on your own?
I think it's important to take one step back and to ask, how did it happen that I actually did spend a lot of time doing freelance consultancy before that? Because at the time, after leaving German Development Institute, I insisted on having a contract at INEF in Duisburg, where I could spend a fair share of my time abroad, doing practical work abroad. And to be quite frank, one major motivation behind that was that I enjoyed the work. And that again had a lot to do with the fact that in consultancy or in the line or the type of work that I was doing, there was often a very direct positive feedback. So there was a very nice reward structure, not only earning more money than in a normal job, but also getting positive feedback, getting confirmation that the kind of work I was doing was appreciated and acknowledged. Whereas when you're working in academia, I mean, that happens once in 10 years, right? Or when you turn 65 or something and everybody applauds. But otherwise, the structure in academia is such that everybody is moaning and groaning all the time and nagging and criticizing you, because that's supposed to be the way it is in academia.
There's some research called action research, and this is just in the line between academia and practice. What's your activity or your moving related with this orientation of research or not?
Well, implicitly it was to some extent. It was also to some extent informed by this whole school of participatory action and research, where I had a crash course on at one stage and learned a couple of tools that I found hugely interesting and very exciting, and so much more exciting than normal academic work. So that was one of the elements that was creating my interest and driving me. But to be very frank, I mean, Frank, you were involved in those days also in a research project that we did together with IDS Sussex, where I was together with two colleagues doing research on ceramic tile clusters in Italy, Spain, and Brazil. And while the research in Brazil was very exciting and really interesting because we knew those companies and we had a very good access, doing the research in Italy and Spain was a bloody nightmare, because we didn't really have good contacts there. We had to build that, and the amount of begging we had to do for them to share at least some of their time with us, that really demotivated me to pursue in this line of empirically based academic research. And since I'm not the kind of person who can just sit down in a cubicle for a year and crunch numbers, I found this whole consultancy field, and not only doing consultancy, but also doing a lot of training work, much more interesting.
Jörg, I would like to go one step back again to the time where you worked for the Institute of Development and Peace. Because my impression at that time was that you were often working in the field, at the same time you were working in the Institute of Development and Peace. And when we worked together, I had the impression that a lot of ideas which you used for your consultancy came out of your impressions from the research, especially on the region in North Rhine-Westphalia, a German region.
Yeah.
What were the learning processes, especially at that time? First of all, why did you move to Duisburg? Because Duisburg is not really the most attractive place for a lot of people. And what were your learning experiences, and how are they related to your decision on becoming a businessman?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I moved to Duisburg because, first of all, I found the whole area, the Ruhr area, extremely exciting. It's just a genuinely exciting place, and a place that had fascinated me for a long time. Whereas after 10 years in Berlin, pretty much knew that place, and there wasn't so much new happening there as far as I was concerned. So moving to Duisburg was not such a big decision. accompanying structural change from nearby and to some extent being involved in it was something that I found really, really interesting. I had started to move into this field of local and regional economic development just before that, coming from the cluster angle initially. And I found that that was a really interesting field, and it kind of takes us back to what we talked about earlier, namely multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary work. If you want to do territorial development in any serious way, you have to draw on so many different disciplines, and that is something that very much appealed to me. The time in Duisburg, where we had basically a free hand, very fuzzy terms of reference in terms of what we were supposed to do, that was fantastic because it was an extremely steep learning curve, understanding how territorial development worked in one region, in one part of Germany, which probably at that time was the most active and one of the most innovative places in terms of territorial development.
Jörg, maybe we have to add that Duisburg is a place, or the Ruhr Valley is a place in Germany which was very much affected by the structural change process, especially on steel and coal. And maybe you can say some words about this research project where you focused on.
Yeah. Well, we had raised, or Dirk Messner had raised funds at the Land level to conduct a research project to look at structural change from the perspective of advanced developing countries. So that we had one colleague from Korea, one colleague from Chile, and myself being there more or less permanently employed, and then we had temporary visitors, colleagues coming from Peru, from Brazil, from Mexico, and some other places who stayed with us for limited periods of time. And we had a mandate to look at whatever issues of structural change we wanted to look at. And one of the earliest things we stumbled upon was the IBA, the International Building Exposition in the northern part of the Ruhr, which was probably the most innovative territorial development effort that has gone on in Germany for decades. And that was very stimulating, and that was very informative for us. And seeing how such innovative approaches then can be linked with more conventional approaches to LED, and how you can leverage this for LED in creating unique advantages, unique features in a given region. That was really, really a very interesting learning experience. And also, in a certain way, it spoiled me, because then moving into other countries that were just starting with typically local economic development was kind of complicated, because all the fancy stuff that I would have loved to do was just far too advanced and really unimaginable for people who were only just trying to work out whether it was permissible to promote business at a local level.
Yes, I met you this time also in the Ruhr Valley, where I worked as a consultant, also advising the regional Ministry of Economy and the trade unions in the process. And you invited me to some sessions with people from emerging countries and practitioners of regional development in North Rhine-Westphalia. And for me, the hypothesis was quite surprising and interesting, that you invited people from developing countries to research, but also to advise people in an advanced industrialized country. How the stakeholder in Germany themselves, or the policymaker in Germany themselves, received this idea to get insights from countries which are much less developed than Germany?
For them, it was out of the question. The response we got was like, okay, so if you want to know how we do it, because we know how to do it, that's fine and we're happy to share our time, but you don't seriously expect that there's anything that we can learn from you guys. Right. So when, for instance, Claudio, one of our colleagues, started to explain how evaluation mechanisms worked in Chile and how they had to calculate the multiplier in terms of tax revenue created through structural policy interventions in Chile, people at NIW were at the same time very surprised and also completely flabbergasted, because they thought, well, why would you want to do that anyway? Because their reality at that stage was, well, we just get the money and we can burn it in whatever way we like, as long as we spend it without hurting any law.
And from your perspective today, what are the things developed country like Germany can learn from developing countries, and how to establish this learning process? Because I think this difficulty to accept lessons from less developed countries is quite obvious. Huh? How you see your function in this communication process?
Well, I've become pretty cautious as far as that is concerned. So I don't think that it's my role or my task to educate anybody in Germany about structural policy or anything like that. More generally speaking, I think one way of describing the situation that we have now is in the way that it was described in a book that came out recently that was called Globality. The subtitle was something like how places all over the world are competing now. And I think that is the kind of message that local actors, local stakeholders in Germany have only learned to a very, very limited extent. And they haven't even started to understand how sophisticated the competition is that is coming up from emerging countries. Because for them, the world is still pretty much like, we the rich countries, and then there's a couple of poor countries somewhere. And the realization that there is very quickly developing countries and very nimble societies, very nimble economies in between, that are really keen to grab our market share and to overtake us and preferably to wipe us out, that realization is only very, very slowly starting to settle in.
Jörg, in the introduction we called you a change agent. I would like to know, do you see yourself as a change agent? Because you changed from academia to business, and we experience this change agent mentality often in our own business now in Mesopotamia.
I think I probably would, and I think it has it's a lot to do with the fact that I'm, in terms of personal traits, extremely impatient and very easily bored, and also extremely curious. So I kind of need constant change, because otherwise I get terribly bored. And that is why I'm experimenting with things all the time. And I think that's also one of the reasons why over time I've really started to appreciate having this little company. Because we just have so much latitude to experiment. We don't have to ask anybody. When in any formal organization, you need permits to do something, you need to have a budget for that. Somebody further up the hierarchy has to say, okay, that's fine, please do that. In my earlier jobs, I noticed that at that stage, when I have convinced and I've got the permit, I've already lost patience and interest in the topic. So that is why living in a private sector environment is something that is so much more suitable to my personality than working in any organization, never mind a government organization.
We try to differentiate the decades of your work, and you said there were the years in the German Development Institute, there were the years in the Institute of Development and Peace with the research which you just talked about, and then there came Mesopartner. So is this change to become a private business, is that the last step which you will take, or will there be another change of work which you would like to do?
That's something that I've been thinking a lot about recently, knowing that I have this tendency to get easily bored. I must prepare myself for the fact that might just happen again. And I have absolutely no idea what I might want to do then at that stage, but I think it's perfectly possible. But it probably would be related in one way or another to what we are doing now, because I still very much enjoy, and I probably will enjoy what we're doing for quite some more time.
Yes, hopefully also in our interest. Well, let's wrap up this podcast looking back from now the practitioner's perspective to the link with the academia, looking back to all the development of development studies. You are collaborating still with some leading research centers, at least in dialogue. We are inviting to our academies several practitioners like Hubert Schmitz from IDS or Peter Knorringer from The Hague, Social Institute of Social Studies. We are in dialogue with such kind of people. On the other hand, we are doing practical work in Mesopartner. How you see the linkage between the more theoretical development professionals and the practitioners? Is there a joint learning process, an accumulation, interaction to grow in knowledge how to manage development?
Actually, I don't think so. What I've been observing is that even organizations like the World Bank appear to battle to bridge the gap between their research arm and their executive branch. So those researchers come up with all sorts of very interesting studies, but I've never had the impression that has had so much influence on what the bank actually does. And I think more generally looking at this whole field of development assistance, it has become increasingly self-contained as far as I can observe. there is an increasing amount of conferences, quasi-academic conferences with quasi-academic standards that are organized within the donor community with peer reviews of papers and all those things that we know from academia. And there's not a single academic at those conferences. It's all practitioners, consultants, professionals from these organizations. And there's many discussions, major bodies of knowledge that are generated in this practitioner community that are not even known in academia. I mean, try to locate academic papers that deal in any systematic way with business development services, which was the dominating discussion in the late 90s, early 2000s. I'm not really aware of more than two or three academic papers, and certainly not a single peer-reviewed publication in an academic journal that looked at specifically at this whole BDS thing. So what academics are doing and what is happening in the donor community is very, very loosely coupled. And I think it's quite natural, and it's unavoidable for that to happen, because in both fields we have increasing internal differentiation. In academia, there's increasing numbers of disciplines popping up, because disciplines multiply through separation. I mean, it's like certain, how are these little animals called? That split, that's divide in two and reproduce in that way. That's how academia works. So you get more and more sub-disciplines and another sub-sub-sub-discipline and so on. And there's a whole lot of people working in those sub-disciplines, and they have to, because that is how you make an academic career. And even within academic disciplines, I mean, who is today capable of giving kind of an overview of what happens in economics? Never mind how to bridge economics, sociology, and political science, or anthropology and geography, right? So even within those disciplines, you have all these subfields nowadays. And for any outside, even for the insiders in the field, it's difficult to follow up on what is happening, because the number of publications is growing exponentially. And for anybody from the outside, it's now impossible to do that. And the same happens, I think, in practical organizations, who are also getting increasingly specialized, and you will get increasingly specialized practical subsectors in the development field with increasingly specialized discussions. And that is just the natural way in which these things happen. And it would take a huge effort. I'm not quite sure who would take that effort to bridge that, to get across that gap. Or to put it in a different way and kind of highlighting the mindset that I'm harboring these days, I think it's a huge business opportunity. So for people like us, to the extent that we like to follow what is happening in the academic field and at the same time work a lot in the practical field, bridging this is a fantastic opportunity.
I think the book demonstrates a lot of articles from academics, but also from practitioners at the policy level or at the local level. They have a lot of open questions which they put on the table to you, especially, and they ask for discussion with you and exchange with you. And I think for us in MesoPartner, it was always also very nice that you were open to share your knowledge and also to bring in new knowledge from different perspectives and to come up with new ideas. Can the authors of these articles in the book, can they expect that you will answer their questions and that you will contribute to this work in between the academic work and the practical work?
Well, I definitely respond. I'm not sure about answering, because I think this constellation of somebody asking and somebody answering is just not how things work, and that is what we experience all the time. But responding and entering in a dialogue, that is something that we definitely do, and that I certainly want to do with those authors. And yeah, I mean, I certainly keep track. I mean, I found that while for some years, especially in the early time of MesoPartner, I was really tired of academia. I really thought that was behind me. I've become increasingly interested again in the more recent years, but also much more selective. So the whole book was around my 50th birthday, and getting old has all sorts of disadvantages. But one of the advantages is that you just get a very good understanding of what is happening in the field, and you develop certain skills. And one of those skills is a very clear perception. So when I'm going through academic literature these days, I can spot very, very quickly whether a given paper or a given book is worth any amount of time, or rather something that can go directly into the waste bin.
Well, thank you very much, Jörg. Hopefully, your collaboration and your activity will help us not getting lost in this specialization in academia and in the practice, and that we can work with you also the next decades, bridging the gap between theory and practice in the development field.
And Uli, maybe we say again the connection to the publication, the book, the birthday anthology for Jörg. It's called Milestones in the Process of Innovation, Change and Development, written by friends and colleagues of Jörg Meyer-Stammer, and you can find it under the website www.lulu.com. Thank you very much, Jörg.
Thank you.
Thank you.